Hello and welcome to Tales from the Hook. My name is Katie Kelleher, aka Katie Cranes, and I am going to be your host for the next half an hour. In this podcast, I'm going to be deep diving into the construction industry. I'm going to be looking into topics such as skills, apprenticeships, some interesting life journeys, and everything in between. Who knows what may happen? This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by our friends over at Liber. If you want to find out more about Liber's products or brilliant innovations, please click the link at the bottom. On today's Tales from the Hook, we have Paul Argent, who started his life working in construction and is now the owner of RPA, Earth Moving Media. He has 71,400 followers on Instagram, 156,000 followers on Facebook, and 21,100 subscribers on YouTube. Paul is a content creator and does everything from writing for magazines, namely Earth Movers magazine. He's a photographer, a videographer, and he's worked with some of the largest plant manufacturers, including our sponsors, Liber. Well worth a mention. So I met Paul last year at a Liber press event first. And then we moved on, and obviously we did Bauma together as well. And now I like to say we're best mates, so... Thank you for coming on, Paul.
You're welcome, Katie. Thank you very much for inviting me.
It's really great having you here. And I think you've got a really, really, not that I want to big you up so much, but I think you've got a really interesting story to tell.
I suppose it's different to many sort of, I don't know, journalists, people in the industry. I've actually come from a construction background, including the years that I've run RPA Media. I've spent 36 years in the construction industry.
Yeah.
I know I don't look that old, do I?
No, not at all. But not at all.
36 years in the construction industry. Started off on the ground, worked as a joiner, site management, project management, built million-pound houses, schools, cinemas. Been there, done that, done all sorts of work in the construction industry, and then decided to get out.
What caused that change, Paul?
Recession in 2007.
Okay.
I was working as a project manager in Chester. Last one into the company, first one out. And I needed to do something different. So I'd been doing a bit of photography, bit of media work for Earth Movers magazine. And it just seemed a natural step. I no real training or anything in the media side of it. It was just, I enjoyed what I was doing.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the construction industry. I didn't want to leave the construction industry at all. That was, you know, that was where I'd been brought up. So I thought, yeah, I'll give it a go. It was first few years are hard, really hard, trying to get your name out there, trying to get known, pestering people, talking to people. And this is what I like. I like the industry, but I also like talking to people.
Yeah.
Just makes life easier.
Were you always a photographer, Paul, when you were previously, previous to all this, were you into photography?
I'd always been taking photographs. I'd always had a big interest in plant and machinery, but also the construction industry. I'd been taking sort of progress photos for the clients I was working for my own records as well. So it was just, yeah, it was the natural step forward for me.
Yeah. So when that recession hit and you found yourself out of a job and you thought, well, here we go, I've got a camera. I've got a camera. I know some people. I mean, where did that come from? Did someone just ask you to come and do something, or did you put yourself forward for just to take that leap? of faith to think I can do this?
Well, it all started off with a friend of mine, Graham Wilson, who used to be a co-director of H.C. Wilson Transport in Suffolk. He phoned me up and he said, I've got 10, I think it was 10 loads of a Komatsu PC3000 mining shovel going into an open cast in South Wales. Would you be able to take a couple of days down there and do some photography for me? Yeah, no problem at all, was the answer. Didn't even think about it. And it went down there, took the photos. Komatsu Mining, who were putting the machine together, said, I will, our office will buy some photos off you.
Wow.
I thought, oh, that's good. And they also said, you know, there's that magazine, Earth Movers. Would they, you know, I'm sure they'd be interested in something. So I thought, nobody's going to be interested in my photographs. But I thought about it, contacted Graham Black at Earth Movers, and so the rest is history. That was 16, 17 years ago. And Graham said, yeah, we'll take some photos off you. Can you stick 1,000 words to it? And me being me said, yeah, no problem at all. went home, two-finger typing. You know what it's like?
Yeah.
Two-finger typing, and I think it was about 1,500 words later, sent it off to him, expected to hear nothing back. And he came back to me, and he said, what else can you do?
That's amazing.
So, well, right place, right time.
It is, isn't it? You know, and I often talk about this and the way we kind of fall into things, and I don't know, sometimes it feels like things are meant to be, doesn't it? And everything kind of clicks into place.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it does. It does. And I think I've been very lucky going through what I'm doing, meeting some really good people and having them accept what I do and like what I do and push me forward for what I do. You know, Graham was a great inspiration. He, you know, he gave me the sort of kick up the arse that I needed to go and approach these companies. You know, did some work with Finnins early on, and Peter Haddock was great like that. And Pete was a great person to push other people like myself.
Yeah.
Graham was a great person like that as well, to push and can you do more. So yeah, there's great people within the industry that I've met over the last 15 or so years. You know, Dan Jilks, Jeff Ashcroft, both very well respected journalists, but I would like to think now good mates as well.
Yeah.
You know, we have a chat. Myself and Jeff have a chat every so often. And yeah, it's a nice industry to be in.
It is.
It is a nice industry to be in.
You know what you're saying in previous podcasts. It all comes down to networking. A lot of things come down to networking and growing that. And you know, you're talking about your network and how that's pushed you on. And I think it does that for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's true. I think, you know, the industry that I'm in at the moment, and yourself as well, you've got to be able to talk to people. It's one thing being able to take a photograph or write about something, but I think you've got to be able to have the confidence to talk to people,
yeah,
know what you're talking about. And I think, you know, the previous to me starting this, the 20-plus years of working in the construction industry, given me an insight in how people do the job, and I'm not just going in to talk to them about that big yellow digger,
yes,
or why are they knocking that building down. to put a new house there or whatever. I think I know the way that they operate, the way that they are doing things. Don't get me wrong, every day's a school day, yeah. Because, you know, things change and they have done massively over the last 30 years. But having the ability to talk to people and know what they're doing is great for me.
I think it definitely gives you that foundation, because... And it comes across as more authentic, doesn't it? If you can link in with people on that level, rather than coming from a kind of a content creator view from someone who's never been near a construction site or been near a plant and just going, oh yeah, it's amazing that, you know, oh yeah, fascinating. What's it do? You know, yeah. I think it's I can imagine it's very helpful to know what you're actually looking at, and especially if you're writing articles. If you're having to talk about these things. So I'm thinking back to these early days. Well, so you're saying like 16 years ago when you started with Earth Movers, is that right? So is this, you know, this whole content creator, obviously we know you're an influencer now as well.
Oh, no.
I'm going to touch on it later. I'll bring it up later. For anyone who's listening, Paul absolutely hates the word influencer. So we just throw it in there. But The term sort of content creator, influencer, that wasn't really, I mean, I might be completely wrong, but was that kind of there 16 years ago? Or what were you just a photographer? Or
I saw myself just as a photographer. The writing came because I was asked to.
Yes.
Potentially I could have made a living just as a photographer. But having that ability to string two words together, I'm going to sound awful now, but not making something up, but being able to put words to a picture sort of helped. It was, as I said, it was hard to start with the typing. You know, That you know, sausage fingers and what have you. It's not easy to handle a keyboard, but it nowadays, I can have days now where, you know, you sort of get a total memory block or whatever you want to call it, and I just can't write anything.
Yeah.
But then other days now, I can do 6,000 words in a day, you know, rattle off a couple of features for the magazines and go from there. So I think the early days were more photography. I wanted to do my photography. Nowadays it's a combination of everything, and more so now where it's video as well.
Yeah, that's. I think this is one of the most impressive things about your journey for me, that you've managed to reinvent yourself so many times throughout these years. So you started off in construction, you started dabbling in photography, you start writing for the magazine and taking photos, you get approached by all these companies asking you to do all these different photos and things like that, and now we're up to like today where you're up there with these massive content creators. It's been in the last, I mean, I don't know, even, you know, since I set up kind of my work Instagram and things like that, to see this boom of kind of, I'm going to go influencers, Instagram. And you've got all these followers on Facebook, on YouTube, on Instagram. I mean, you're up there with the best of them. Your following's massive, absolutely massive. So once again, you've managed to reinvent yourself and top the charts. It's amazing.
I suppose it's one of those things, you've got to move with the times, haven't you?
Yes.
You know, I could sit at home just writing or going out and taking a few photographs and writing a story, but I think I remember when I started out in the construction industry, you would go into the canteen at break time and people would be there reading newspapers.
Yep.
You go into most canteens now, and you'll know this from your time on site. What do people do?
Yeah, sit on their phone.
They, they sit there with a phone and they're looking at YouTube, they're looking at all these different social media channels, and it's video content. And that is where everything seems to be going. And that's another thing that we're doing now. I'm still working with, because I'm still freelance, I still work with Earth Movers magazine. I'm with Awesome Earth Movers now. And we've taken that step of, instead of just words and pictures, our interactive magazine has links to video. And Chris, who does the majority of the video for that magazine, is now, you're saying I'm on top of my game. Chris is just something else. His content creation is unbelievable. He's probably the one to look up to.
Yeah, there's a real art to it, isn't there? It's not as easy as people think it is. People think, oh, you just slap a video and you do this and that. But it's not, is it? There's actually a real art to making good content.
Yeah, it is. It's, I think it great content comes from having the right bit of kit in front of you in our industry. And also having the right people as well.
Yeah.
You know, I remember years ago going out to an unnamed contractor.
Okay.
Who I was asked to interview and ask him why he bought this certain product. And he was great. He would talk till the cows came home. He was grand. I said, right, we'll mic you up. If you can give us your name, your company, and why you bought this product, nothing.
Really?
You could hear a pin drop. He couldn't remember his name. And I think it's having that confidence to speak on camera. Now, you know, a couple of the companies that I work with, there's one lad in particular, we go out and we do jobs, and it's just trying to reassure people to speak on camera. Some are great, some are awful. But as you said, the amount of content creators coming up through the construction industry, machine operators, I think confidence is massive thing for a lot of them.
And I agree with you. I mean, you know, I'm not a content creator, and I'm not an influencer, but I do get around on social media a little bit, as we know. And you know, I've done videos for a few companies, and it is confidence, and it is, and you see it. You know, you've got like Colin the Digger Driver, the Digger Girl. You've got all these people with, I mean, massive followings. But in reality, what they're showing and how they started is showing their job. They showed their job. They showed what they did on a day-to-day life. And then slowly you see people's personalities come into it. More followers. And it is that confidence building. It definitely is.
But then I think this is where I think I'm different, because nobody wants to see what I do on a daily basis, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, driving 4 hours to site, talking to somebody, take a few photos, and then...
No, you see, you're selling yourself short here, because I know you have the dream job, Paul. I know, although I know you work very hard, don't get me wrong, but I know you're in Switzerland, you're in America, you're in, you all over the world. You go to China, you go to Germany, you go all around Europe, and I know this is what you do on a weekly basis.
It sounds like a dream job, and I love it.
I think listening, everyone's going, wow. And it does. I know you work hard.
What a jet set lifestyle. Yeah. This last 12 or 18 months doing work with Awesome Earth Movers has been great, because Chris's vision is to get more international content, European, Asian, American content, and it's something different.
Yeah.
I've done loads of travelling before Awesome Earth Movers came along, with the Earth Mover stuff, with Liebherr stuff. I do enjoy it. But I think what people need to know from the outside looking at, oh, he's over in Germany again. Oh, he's over in wherever again. Again, it's, you're standing at an airport.
Yeah.
You fly out to the factory visit, you may have a site visit, hotel, back again. There's very little in the way of sightseeing, yeah, or going out and enjoying yourself. It's work. It's great work. Don't get me wrong. I'm not complaining in the slightest. I absolutely love it. But yeah, it can be hard, and yeah, not getting any younger.
But yeah, I think how you do it is amazing as well, Paul. Because all this content, all these videos, everything you create, you're very much behind the scenes. There's a lot of content creators who are in front of the camera, you know, very full on. But you managed to build up all this following and hiding away completely, which I think is fascinating as well.
Face for radio.
No, I don't know. That's a lie as well, because you could easily do it. You could easily do it, but somehow you've managed to smash it out of the ballpark without incorporating yourself into any of it.
Well, it's not about me, is it?
No.
It's... Don't get me wrong. If I had to speak on camera, and I know Freddie at Diggers and Dozers has got me on camera at Bauma.
Oh, I love Freddie. He's my favourite.
Yeah. Yeah, got me on camera. Great. My philosophy is it's about what I talk about,
yeah,
the product, the project, the people, rather than me. Yeah, I've got the history of working in the construction industry and all that, but yeah, it's I don't like talking about myself.
Well, you're doing a good job of it today. Why do you think people are so interested in plant? Because it's massive, isn't it? I mean, I throw these numbers out there quite flippantly, but they are huge numbers, and most people would absolutely die to have followings like you have. But why are people so interested in it?
I don't know. Is it the big kid in them? Is it the big toys? Is it... Because that's what it was for me when I was a kid. I just liked standing there at a fence watching a digger working in the field or what have you. I think it's just, in some cases, the sheer size of the machines, yeah, and what they're able to do. You know, you go on about the followers that I've got. There's USA, Australia, all over the globe. But it's just, yeah. I think, again, it comes back to when I was asked to do some stuff for Earth Movers magazine at the start. I'm thinking, why does anybody want to listen to what I want to talk about and what I want to write about? It's, I don't know.
It's a good question, isn't it?
I don't know.
But there's a huge following, isn't there, for plant, cranes, diggers, dozers, everything. Yeah. And people love it. I mean, people are really passionate about it, aren't they? They're, even people who don't operate these pieces of machinery are passionate about it and looking at it and chiming in on what they know about the latest technology and what they think about it. And it's a real phenomenon. It's a fantastic place to be.
It is. I've always enjoyed the construction industry. There's some downsides to it. There can be a lot of hatred on the social media.
It's a lot of jealousy.
You know, I think we touched on this when we were talking earlier. That you know, there's people out there. You put a video out or you put a photograph out, and there'll always be people out there that go, that's wrong. This is wrong.
Yeah.
That should be done that way. And it annoys me that from a short snippet of time that they have a judgment or a sort of knowledge of what's going on when in fact they don't.
Yeah.
For me, I was always brought up when I was learning the trade, ask a question. Don't assume that you know everything.
Yeah.
Ask the question. And I find if people ask a question, I'll give them an answer or describe actually what's going on. What really annoys me is people that jump in just, I think, to get their voice heard.
It is, yeah. There's a lot of showboating, isn't there?
There's a lot of keyboard warriors.
I have to say something negative and make a statement. It is. And I think, you know, and it, from another side, it gets even weirder when you put yourself out there, doesn't it? Because it becomes personal. And that's a little bit harder to take, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I put a video out, and I did a video for HS2. They stuck it out, one of their cranes. And then you start reading the comments, and it's like, there was stuff about me wearing my glasses on and my safety double glasses, people picking up on that. Personal comments about, oh, they only wheel me out for videos and things. And it gets quite personal, you know. And I'm not very good at taking it. I'm not, I don't take it very well. So it can only...
I think that's wrong that people should say that, because, you know, you've done your training. You're an experienced crane operator. You're good at talking. So why would they not use you to promote something?
There's a lot.
It's not as if you've just been picked off the street.
Hopefully
Katie
not.
Talks well.
Yeah.
Katie can come and do this.
But there's a lot, I think you know it from yourself and what you do. There's a lot of competitiveness. There's a lot of jealousy, you know, and obviously you work with a lot of big clients. I can imagine that there's some jealousy about you've got these clients and you get this and you get that. And it's the same thing, you know, for anyone putting themselves out there. It's the same thing for the videos I do. Everyone thinks I have some way of getting a leg up and I must be getting loads of money for it. And it doesn't work like that, does it? It's just...
Because I can talk to people, I will not go into a client and go, I want this, I want that, this is what you should be doing. Let's sit down over a cup of coffee and talk about it.
That's how you get the best results, isn't it?
Yeah, talking to people, just, you know, sort of, well, Lieber. You know, I've been working with Lieber for 10 years, maybe. And they're an absolutely brilliant company to work for. You know, I work with Gwyn in the marketing department in the UK here. And it's just great. It I'm not going to say it's an easy job because, I've got to go up to the north of Scotland. I've got to go here. I've got to go there. But I make it easy. I think I make it easier for them and they make it easy for me. It just works.
It's about relationships, isn't it? And that's...
Exactly.
And I think that's, you know, that's what the whole industry is about. It's about having good relationships and building on that. And like, it goes back to networking again, isn't there? And I think...
It is. You know, you go to these press events, you talk to people, you get to know people, and you're not, I don't know how to put it. It's, you just talk to people. I don't know any other way of putting it.
And I think for any, you know, it's really good advice for people, isn't it? And it's not always the easiest thing to do. I mean, we do make it sound quite simple. You just talk to people. But putting yourself out there, regardless of who you are and how confident you are, is always a hard thing to do. It always takes it always takes almost a bit of push from yourself to go and do it. It's one of them things you know you need to do because it makes your business better. It makes everything grow. It makes, you know, it can get open doors, give you opportunities. But it's not easy to do. For anyone, it's not easy to do.
Oh, God, no. And I think I've been very lucky with growing up in the industry, knowing what I know and being in the position that I was in with a couple of the construction companies I worked for, that you had to talk to people, you had to interact. I know from the other side of it, when I was running my own building company, we came across people in management that were, they were of a certain disposition, shall we say. And some people were great. You'd get on well with them. You'd do that little bit extra for them. And life was grand. There was other people that made your life hard. Really, really made your life hard in some respects on site. And those were the people that, well, he wants me to come in on a Saturday. No chance.
Yeah.
Not doing that. So it's about it, give and take, isn't it?
It is. It is. And that, I think that's life. That's a good life lesson for anyone, isn't it, really? It's it's about giving. Now, I want to touch on something with you, Paul. So I brought it up earlier, and I called you an influencer, which your face, if anyone could see Paul's face, his face says it all whenever I say that word. But when we were in Bauma, there was a group of us and we were discussing, because we were on an ambassador influencer event with Lever, and we were discussing we were discussing what an influencer means. And we discovered in this group of us that the only real influencer out of the lot of us was actually Paul, because he's the only one that makes money out of it. So you've managed, not only do you write, you do all this work for magazines, but you've managed to monetize platforms such as Facebook and YouTube, which is massive. I mean, we couldn't get our heads around it at the show because it's quite out there. And I don't know many people in my life who have managed to monetize these platforms, but you've managed to do this with the content you're creating.
Well, there's quite a few of us out there that do it. Some a lot more successfully than myself. But then, funny enough, I was watching the BBC News this morning and somebody called KSI was on it.
Okay, yeah.
You know, a bit too young for me and all that sort of stuff. But it was on about how he has become a social media influencer, a social media star, just by putting stuff out on YouTube.
Yep.
And it was interesting to see and hear how he started. And don't get me wrong, it's totally different to the way I started and what have you, but there's just so many different opportunities now for making money. You know, 5 years ago, would you have been a crane operator?
Oh, I was 5 years ago. Would I have picked it? No, it's not even 8 years ago when I got asked about it. It wasn't ever in my eye line to become a crane operator.
But it's something different. And as you said, you know, I've reinvented myself going from working in the construction industry to taking photos, doing a bit of writing and video and what have you. Just having that ability to make a couple of quid on a YouTube video or a Facebook video or any sort of other social media platform, it's not the core of my income by a long shot. Yeah. But if you're putting out regular content and regular content that falls within the values of Facebook or Meta or YouTube, they'll invite you to to monetize your content, but it has to be original content.
Right. Yep.
And that is the problem with to be fair, a lot of the social media influencers that are coming through now, operators and what have you, all their content has the potential to be monetized as long as they keep it their own.
Yes.
If you start putting out all sorts of content from other platforms and other entities, that's when it gets pulled back and you won't be doing it anymore.
No.
It has to be the original content. And we get asked to put out people's content, other manufacturers' contents, okay, and all this. We try to avoid it because at the end of the day, it will be my name at the top corner.
Yeah.
Or it will be Awesome Earth Movers at the top corner, or it'll be whoever it is that we're working with. And we want original, good content, not something that's been shot on a potato, something that's been, poorly produced. We want to produce the best content that we can. And we feel that we can produce the best content. So therefore, it's original, and that is it.
So,
without a shadow of a doubt.
I'm sat here listening to this, and if I'm thinking this could be an avenue for me, and I know this is going to be a tough question for you because you've been building this for a long, long time, and I think it's important that people know this isn't a quick fix, and it is something that you really, really, really need to work out and put a lot of yourself into. And you do, and you really do. And, I talk about it being a dream job, and you're not there, this, that, and the other, and you're traveling around the world, but you might not be home for weeks at a time, isn't it, Paul? You're really out there. So, I mean,
yeah,
it's hard work. It's really hard work. But how would someone get started if they were thinking, I could do this, this sounds really interesting, how would they get started?
Nowadays, it's probably build their own social media platforms, which is getting harder and harder.
I agree.
If you look at Awesome Earth Movers, Chris, he has built up that platform religiously on social media for the last 10 plus years.
Yeah.
Now he is well ahead of anybody. There's a few of us following in his footsteps. You've got the likes of Buildwit in the US. But it is hard to build that audience. Really hard to build that audience. It takes persistence. It takes time. And a lot of hard work. It is a lot of hard work.
And it is hard work off your old shoulders as well, isn't it? Because no one pays you to build an audience. It's not like you need that audience before you'll start monetizing anything. So you need to put in that effort. You need a job, obviously, to pay that. And then you need that effort outside of that job to try and build that audience. So it's not...
That's exactly it. The start for me was words and pictures with Earth Movers, and that was a regular income. Depending on what sort of site visits I was doing and what sort of material I was putting to Earth Movers, but that was a regular income coming in. And on the back of that, as I was out on site, I would take a bit of video. That little bit of video would then go onto a YouTube channel. And obviously YouTube has its stipulations. You can't get monetized until you've got so many followers or so many minutes viewed on videos. And I think they're all very similar to that these days. And it was just, I'll put a video up there.
Yeah.
You get a few people liking it. Next site visit, you do the same. You do your words and your pictures for your paying job.
Your main job, yeah.
You put your video out there. And all of a sudden, that would build up to the point where you could monetize it on YouTube. So you'd monetize it, and you would literally get a couple of quid.
Yeah.
Not a great deal. You wouldn't make a living out of it. I still couldn't. But you need that base, and I've been very lucky in having that base to allow me to do other things.
Yeah.
Sort of in the social media sphere.
Well, I think everything you've done is amazing. I think it's really interesting
Thank
as well,
you.
And it's a really interesting angle for people who most of our listeners do work in construction. I think it will be one of those things that people don't often think about. You know, it's kind of on the peripheral of people, but it's, and I think, you know, and it, like we talk about all these influencers, ambassadors and things like that. And the rise of it at the moment is phenomenal, isn't it? It's going through the roof. And, you know, you've got, I keep going back to Digger Girl because I do follow her, and she's amazing.
Yeah, Amy's great.
I mean, and she's just signed with Hyundai.
Yeah.
Amazing. CITB College. You know, she's getting all these deals off of the back of showcasing what she does, her work.
And
I mean, it's fascinating.
It is. It's. But if you have a look at careers now, you know, when I was leaving school, it was you go and work in a factory, you go and work on a building site, or there was very little in the way of, unless you went to university and got a degree, and you were going to do this, that, and the other. There was very little in the way that they would push you to do. You know, you wouldn't get the chance of going into television or going into, you know. And there was no such thing as social media back then. So I think nowadays there's a lot more opportunities for different jobs.
Oh, crazy! And I think, you know, and it's, I think the most important thing for people to realise is it's not easy. And, you know, so you hear a lot, I do a lot of school visits and a lot of kids want to be influencers. And so, you know, it's like, and you kind of think, in what? What do you want to do? It's not, and for most people, it is just a sideline. It's not a job. It's something they do because it's a subject they're passionate about.
Yeah. But then to become an influencer, What are you influencing people to do?
Good question.
You know, I don't like, you know how I feel about that term. What am I influencing people with?
I think a lot of your work's around brand awareness, isn't it? And it's branding for companies.
Yeah.
And showcasing their abilities and technical specs and things like that. So it's showcasing mostly what you do, I would say.
It is. I as you know, I don't like that word influencer.
No,
I don't like the tag influencer.
But we're all going to call you it. But yeah.
I know. Yeah, you will now. I like to talk openly and honestly about any product, whether it be, let's drop some names, Liebherr, JCB, Caterpillar, Volvo, Komatsu, whatever. You know, you get people sort of blinkered within the industry. We've got an influx of Chinese technology from Lugong and Sany at the moment. And people are, Chinese machines, no good. But that's their perception.
Yeah.
If they were to take the time and have a look under the skin of one of these Chinese machines, they'll find that it's very similar to anything else.
Yeah.
For most people, what they really want is to know, is the backup good? Because you could buy the most expensive machine out there or the cheapest machine in whatever range you're looking for. And if the backup is poor, inevitably when it breaks down, who's going to come out and fix it? So you need the good backup. You need the good residuals. You need the fuel economy. You need the productivity. It's the whole package rather than I'll support this brand because they're paying me, or I'll support this brand because, you know, they're taking me on this trip or whatever. I would rather be open and honest with people and say, this is a good bit of kit because it reduces your fuel consumption. It's lighter. It's more powerful. And I think being open and honest with people is it's quite refreshing in this sort of industry.
Yes, yeah, it is. And I agree with you. It means you're not, you can be impartial and impartial, actually talk about
that's it.
Are you seeing a rise in sustainable products? So I know we've got electric cranes, we've got electric piling rigs. Battery powered, I should say, shouldn't I, rather than electric.
Battery powered.
Yeah.
There's a place for everything. You know, we looked at the battery power stuff at Bauma with Liebherr, and great stuff. But if we'll focus on Liebherr because obviously they're sponsoring this podcast. But if you look right across the Liebherr stand, you had battery power, plug-in hybrid.
Yep.
You had hydrogen power as well. So I think the majority of manufacturers are being driven to more sustainable power sources. Unlike car manufacturers who it's electric all the way.
Yes.
Or battery all the way. And I think the majority of manufacturers are taking sustainability very, very seriously. But I think it has to be in the right application. We spoke to JCB just before Christmas, and they're almost ready to launch. Well, I think they are launching their hydrogen engine, their own design. And that has to be the way forward, I think, for larger construction machinery. Everybody seems to be taking it seriously. Everybody seems to be having a push on it. It has to be something that the world comes around to, can't keep burning fossil fuels. But there has to be a realistic program of when things change. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day about electric cars. Now, the range is getting better on them.
Yeah.
But you go to, I went into Rugby Services the other day, probably one of the newest services on the motorway network in the UK. Banks and banks of chargers, full.
Really?
Everyone
really?
Was full.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So if I had pulled in there in my electric car, going, I got to be on site in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Hang on, I need 3/4 hour to charge up. I need to queue up for potentially 20 minutes, half an hour before I can charge up. That's putting a massive increase on the time that I'm out on a daily basis. So I think with the government pushing for no new diesel cars or petrol cars to be produced after 2030, there needs to be a bigger push on the infrastructure for electric vehicles. And I think from, you know, the manufacturers, increasing ranges has to be a big priority. Fine if you're going from home to work a couple of miles every day, great, no issues at all. But you look at the motorway, trucks, vans, cars like myself, you know, I'm doing between 40 and 45,000 miles a year before I do any work.
Yeah.
There's a lot of travelling involved in this job. And whilst I've looked at electric vehicles, it's not right yet. One, the cost of the vehicle, and two, the range and the ability to find somewhere to charge.
Yeah,
and that's putting me off at the moment.
And I think, do you know what? I think it's the same concerns with plant on site, isn't it? And the you know, in some sites it really suits. You know, your HS2s, obviously, inner city sites, and they've got the infrastructure. It's infrastructure. They've got the infrastructure set up for it.
Yeah.
We know, you know, with the Liebherr battery powered cranes and things, you need the right infrastructure. You need it there to support the crane in its journey and what it's doing during the day. And if that's not in place, then it's no good. So they're not going to be able to turn up on your small sites, just rig up and start working. It takes a lot of planning at the moment to have this plant, the machinery in the way.
That's it. It's big projects where the infrastructure will be in place. We went to Norway early last year. And they were reclaiming part of a fjord. Eventually they'll build houses on there. But they had infrastructure in place for charging electric vehicles up.
Right.
And it was just a sea of rock. That's all you could see was rock everywhere. Yet the car park had infrastructure in place. And that is part of the planning permission for doing jobs. You have to have that infrastructure in place.
Brilliant. Do you think we'll ever get there?
I don't. You want an honest answer?
Always.
Well, I think bigger projects, yes, you will.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned HS2. That's a job that's going constantly for the next God knows how many years. To have the expense of putting in the infrastructure for electric vehicles is a drop in the ocean for them.
Yeah.
You try and put that onto a small developer who is building one or two houses, and all of a sudden that cost of bringing an electric cable in early doors.
Yeah.
Because we all know what the services companies are like in the UK for giving you a date for putting services into, you know, a new structure. It's weeks and months before you can get that. So that's either something you've got to pre-plan for your project to bring the services in, or it's going to be to the detriment of, well, hang on, we can't afford this at this stage. We don't develop. It's been realistic.
I agree.
And I think personally, the government guidelines for 2030 is going to be, it's going to be missed with the lack of infrastructure.
I agree. And I think, you know, and I think you're right. It's definitely at the moment, it's not one solution suits all. And I'm excited about it. I'm excited about, you know, I like new tech and I like seeing where it's going, and the cranes are absolutely amazing, as are the piling rigs, you know, because they don't compromise on power. They're fantastic. So I think it's going to be really, really exciting time.
But like we say, it's not for everyone. Battery power is phenomenal in the right application.
Yes.
You have a mobile piece of kit that requires charging once, twice, three times a day, perhaps because it's moving so much. And then all of a sudden that joy of the power that you get from batteries is all lost because half the day you spent charging up. There was a real interesting machine that I saw at the demonstration ground that Liebherr had at Bauma, which was removable battery packs.
Yes.
Now, if that's another alternative, because all you need is your infrastructure again, charging one battery pack up, machine uses a battery pack, quick swap over, done.
Yeah.
It's thinking outside the box and offering different solutions.
Yeah, that kind of bypasses the need for such heavy infrastructure, you know, which is amazing. So yeah, I think it's going to be really exciting. I'm excited anyway about the future of plant.
It's going to be an interesting few years.
Yes, definitely. And
I think
what I'm going to do now, Paul, is I'm going to ask you my final question, which I ask everyone. It's the same question across the board. What is one thing we can all do to make the construction industry a little bit better?
Be nice.
Perfect.
I know it's been said in different contexts before, but, you know, we're all going for the same goal. We all want to produce a product that the client, the homeowner, the whoever is going to occupy a building or what have you, I think is just be nice, do your best.
Love it. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for coming on today.
You're welcome, Katie. Look, always great to chat with you.
It's been very interesting.